We are looking at a 2026 PDF ebook release titled My Hometown Hokitika, A Fifth Generation Coaster Reflects by Rosalie May Reynolds Shigeru.
And I mean, it is just a remarkable piece of documentation. What we are looking at here is a highly detailed, deeply personal slice of social history.
Yeah.
It's centered right on the rugged West Coast of New Zealand in that post-World War II era.
Yeah.
But the author doesn't just give us a dry chronological timeline.
Right. It's not a textbook.
Exactly. She uses her own family genealogy, historical photographs, and just these incredibly vivid childhood memories to map out the psychology of an entire community. To understand the author's childhood, we first have to understand the specific sociological bridge she represents.
Right.
She identifies herself as belonging to the generation that has no name. She explicitly predates the baby boomers.
That's a silent bridge, kind of.
Yeah, basically. The boomers, as we know, they came along and loudly defined global culture. But her cohort was this quiet, interstitial group that grew up in a society that was fundamentally safe.
There were no food banks because, well, there was simply no need for them.
The level of societal uniformity she describes is just fascinating. She writes about local police officers whose primary function, at least, you know, in the eyes of the kids, seemed to be just taking them off for riding their bicycles on the footpath. And if we look even further back in her family tree to the pioneer stock she comes from, you see exactly why they valued stability so highly.
Oh, man, the pioneer stories. This is where this text turns into an absolute adventure novel.
It really does.
These are people who arrived in Hokitika during the wild 1860s gold rush. You have her paternal great-great-grandfather, Thomas Freeman, arriving in New Zealand in 1858.
Hmm.
But the story that completely derailed me was about her maternal grandfather. This is a guy who ran away to sea as a young man, and then in 1879, he decides to jump ship in the port of Lyttelton.
Such a cinematic moment.
And how does he pull off this maritime desertion? He hides in an apple barrel.
Probably smelling of rotting fruit, holding his breath as the ship's officers walk right past him.
Just praying he doesn't cough.
Exactly. Also, he could escape and start a new life on one of the most rugged, unforgiving coastlines in the entire world.
It's wild to think about how fast society shifted there. In just two generations, this family goes from a guy literally curled up in an apple barrel escaping a ship to kids casually riding their bicycles on perfectly manicured, safe suburban streets.
It's an astonishingly fast sociological shift.
It really is. Like, this nameless generation is the quiet bridge between survivalist pioneers and the modern world.
So to the residents in the 1940s and 50s, Hokitika felt like a metropolis. Now, the population was just over 2,000 people. But isolation breeds a very specific kind of self-sufficiency. Because the west coast of New Zealand is so geographically cut off by the Southern Alps, a town of 2,000 people couldn't just rely on the next city over.
It had to do everything itself.
Exactly. It had to function as a metropolis. The author details how it had its own doctors, a hospital, dentists, banks, picture theaters, and a milk powder factory that exported globally.
Wow.
It even had a functional airport with small planes servicing the deeply remote areas of Southwestland.
So it was just this fully enclosed ecosystem. And the crown jewel of that ecosystem, at least for the author, was the Carnegie Library.
Oh, yes. The library.
This was funded by Andrew Carnegie, you know, the American steel magnate who seeded thousands of libraries worldwide.
I love that. It perfectly illustrates the intense value this supposedly rough pioneer town placed on civic institutions and education.
Yeah, she was really proud of it.
She writes with immense pride about working there as a volunteer librarian when she was in the fifth form.
And just for anyone unfamiliar with the mid-century New Zealand school system, being in the fifth form meant she was around, what, 15 years old?
Yeah, roughly 15. It was a highly pivotal year because it was when students sat their national school certificate exams.
Right, so volunteering at the library at that age was a serious mark of civic responsibility.
Exactly.
The author describes the local road rail bridge, which is exactly what it sounds like. It was a single narrow bridge over a major river where cars and actual multi-ton locomotives shared the exact same path.
Sounds terrifying.
Right. There were no complex safety barriers. You just had to look, listen, and, you know, not drive onto the bridge if a literal train was coming. But it points to a society that demanded a really high baseline of personal awareness.
It was a high trust, low safety net environment. And that environment directly shaped the psychology of the children growing up in it. I mean, the most striking theme in the memoir's middle section is the sheer unfiltered spatial autonomy these kids had.
Oh, definitely. Here's where it gets really interesting. The bicycle was the ultimate key to the kingdom.
Oh, yes.
She describes how getting her own bicycle meant her world exploded into ownership of the town. She could pedal downtown, explore the riverbanks, make her own decisions, completely dictate her own schedule. As long as her parents knew generally where she was and she was home by 5 p.m. for dinner, she was entirely free.
Compare that to the hyper-surveilled, highly anxious reality of modern childhood.
Right. It's night and day. And this is why I ask you to consider the benefits of reading this ebook. It transports you to a time when kids just roamed free. It gives modern readers this nostalgic, grounded escape from today's hyper-connected, anxious world.
And the author uses these detailed childhood vignettes to illustrate a broader social history. The ebook isn't just a list of facts. It's a sensory experience of a small town where thrifty families composted, burnt their waste, and valued community loyalty above all else.
And that leads to a really crucial causality in the book. That immense pride in the town didn't just exist in childhood. It forged them into fiercely protective adults. When you spend your childhood mapping every inch of a town on your bicycle, you don't just live in that town anymore.
No, the town becomes an extension of your identity.
Exactly. And you see this territorial protection play out spectacularly in the adults of Hokitika.
Civic duty is arguably the strongest genetic trait in the Reynolds family line. A perfect example is the author's father, Winston Reynolds, who served as the mayor of the Hokitika borough from 1974 to 1982.
So Hokitika has this historic old cannon that sat on Cass Square, guarding the town for decades. But one day, some bureaucrat or opportunist decides, without consulting the mayor, to secretly load this historic cannon onto a freight train.
To sell it for scrap, right?
Yes. The plan is to ship it over the mountains to Christchurch and literally melt it down for scrap metal.
The audacity of trying to quietly steal a town's history is staggering.
Right. But in a town where everyone knows everyone, a secret like that doesn't last long. Someone spots it, they tip off Mayor Reynolds, and the author's brother recalls their father dashing down to the railway station in high dudgeon.
Just sprinting down there.
He physically intercepts the train right before it departs, demands the immediate offloading of the cannon, and absolutely refuses to back down. And because of that direct intervention, the cannon was saved, and it still sits in a historical park today.
What's so revealing about that story is that it mirrors the exact temperament of his ancestors. If we trace the lineage back to his grandfather, the author's great-grandfather, James Reynolds, we see the exact same brand of direct physical guardianship.
Oh, the river wall guy.
Yes. James was the foreman in charge of building the massive wooden wall in the 1860s that literally protected the Hokitika township from being washed away by the river.
He was the guy holding the water back. And the lore surrounding him is that one of his laborers addressed him in an uncivil manner. He warned the guy crossed him a second time, and James Reynolds literally picked the laborer up and threw him bodily right into the freezing river.
It is a very robust style of management.
I just laugh every time I picture that, throwing a guy in the river, stopping a literal train. But it shows you that history isn't just passive dates on a page. It's active. It's people refusing to let their heritage be sold for scrap.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, a major benefit of downloading this PDF is seeing how civic duty and community involvement, like the author's own church activities and youth groups, create this deep, unbreakable bond with a place. When you know the stories of a town, you fight to preserve it.
Which brings us to the ultimate theme of the text, really. Moving from the physical preservation of the town to the spiritual and emotional preservation of the family. Why did the author go through all the trouble of compiling these photos, emails, and memories into this comprehensive ebook?
She answers that by taking a hard look at her own life. Mm. And she uses a phrase that feels incredibly loaded in today's cultural climate. She states unequivocally that she has lived a privileged life.
But she strips that word of all its modern baggage, doesn't she?
Yes, she redefines privilege entirely. She is clear that her privilege has absolutely nothing to do with extreme wealth, fame, luck, or physical appearance. Her definition of a privileged life rests on three pillars. She never went hungry, she never had to sleep rough, and crucially, she writes, I have always known love and never doubted that I am loved.
And she takes that profound foundation of love and uses it to gently but firmly critique the direction of modern society.
She dives into a fascinating philosophical framework here. She reflects on the historical concept of the triune personhood, the idea that a human being is made up of body, mind, and soul.
And she notes that in our current era, society has become hyper-fixated on the mind. We have endless discussions about mental health, therapy, cognitive optimization, all of which she acknowledges are deeply important, of course.
Right, they are important.
But she asks a very sharp question. Has this relentless focus on the mind resulted in the total atrophy of the soul?
It is the ultimate diagnostic question of the book.
Mm.
She is suggesting that while we have never been more aware of our mental states, we have lost touch with the spiritual dimension that actually binds us to other people.
But that connection to community.
Exactly. For her, the soul is not necessarily just about organized religion. It is about our connection to community, our sense of transcendent purpose, and her core belief that every single person has a fundamental need to feel valued.
She frames it as a mandate to find the good, or as she puts it, to find the God in everyone you interact with.
Mm.
So what does this all mean for you listening? By reading this PDF, you aren't just reading about a town in New Zealand. You are reading a blueprint for gratitude.
That's a great way to put it.
It teaches us how to look at our own lives, our own messy family trees, and find the threads of love and resilience.
The author initially sat down to write this manuscript to explain the world to her grandchildren, you know, to give them context they wouldn't otherwise comprehend. But in the act of explaining, it evolved into this powerful social history. It reminds us that ordinary lives, lives filled with fifth birthday parties, bike rides, volunteering at the local library, and community barbecues, they are incredibly profound and worth recording.
So just to recap this whole deep dive, my hometown Hokitika is a masterfully suited mix of visual aids, historical facts, and deeply personal reflections. I highly recommend you head to the website and grab the PDF edition to experience this rich, heartwarming journey for yourself.
And, you know, this raises an important question for you, the listener. The author realized her family's stories would literally die with her if she didn't write them down.
Yeah.
If you were to sit down today and write the social history of your own childhood street,
yeah,
what stories are at risk of disappearing with you, and who are you going to write them down for?
That is a phenomenal question to end on. Think about the legacy you are actually leaving behind. Keep questioning the narratives, keep diving deep into the sources around you, and we will catch you on the next one.